All right, so let's get started. Stand a little more. So the idea of this shiur, the idea of any kind of priestly chal shiur, is to give a little bit of meaning to something which, let's be honest, is something that's not easy to sit through for most people. The slichos can be impenetrable, and it's late, and or it's early, depending on how you see it, and it's hard. Even though we know we were supposed to be inspired for Rosh Hashanah, you want the sheets? That's not relevant. That's not for now. if we had a week to do it, then what I would do is we would go through each one of the slichot so we could kind of give meaning to the parts that we don't understand. But we don't have any time like that. So instead, I thought we'd focus on really a part of the slichot that we probably already kind of do understand, or at least we think we do, but is also probably the most important part of the slichot. Right? You'd give a midot, that part of the slichot, and what exactly is going on over there. I don't want to go through the yud gimel midot. There's lots of books, there's lots of articles you could read about that. I want to just talk about the general mivneh of slichot and how that relates to the yud gimel midot. And you can see the title. The question is, what is the kavanah of slichot in general? Some of you were actually, I gave a shiur about tefillah. I don't know if anybody here was there recently. And this kind of, it harks back to that a little bit. We'll start with the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about the Yud Gimel Midot that we're going to say. And it talks about them in a very direct way, the context in which we say them. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, and the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed, etc., right? That Vayavor Hashem Alpanav Vayikra. Now, that part of the pasuk is pretty clear. Vayavor Hashem Alpanav, that definitely says that God passed over him. And then there's the word Vayikra. Vayikra is a little bit of a problem. Why is Vayikra a problem? Exactly, because in English what you have over here is, and God passed before him, and he said, and he recited, and he declared. Now in English, this is a problem. You'd get an F on your English paper if you did that. Why? Because you have a problem with scope. Miscalculated, apparently. You'd get an F because the word he is unclear. There's two options for he. Who are the two options? Hashem and Moshe. So it says Vayikra. And then it begins, Vayashem Hashem Karachum Mechanim. So the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan is very clear about who is the reciter. Were it not written in the text, it would be impossible for us to say such a thing. Ilmale Mikra Kosov, we would not be able to say such a thing like this. This verse teaches us that the Holy One, blessed be He, drew His robe around Him like a reader of a congregation and showed Moses the order of prayer. So Rav Yochanan adds a little bit to the image. He says that Hashem was wearing a talit, right? And He is teaching Moshe prayer. He said to him, whenever Israel sins, let them carry out His service before me, and I will forgive them. The Lord, Hashem, Hashem. I am the eternal before a man sins, and the same after a man sins, and repents. So this is, I think we gave a share on this 2 years ago, about the first two names of God, according to many of the Rishonim, are Hashem, Hashem, right? Even though that seems to be the same name. So the Gemara explains that the first Hashem is before man sins, and the second Hashem is after man sins. I'm not going to go into exactly what that means. Rabbi Soloveitchik says you need to have mercy. God, you require that God has mercy to speak to us or to relate to us to begin with, and then all the more so you need it after you sin. And what the Gemara is teaching is that it's actually the same Hashem. He is unchanged. Hashem is unchanged when we sin. Just keep that in mind. Hashem doesn't change when we sin. We change, but Hashem doesn't change. Either way, that's what the Gemara says. I am the same. It says, I'm the same after a man sins and repents. A God merciful and gracious. Rabbi Yehuda says, and here's the key, this is what we're thinking of when we say the slichot, a covenant has been made with the 13 attributes that they will not be turned away empty-handed, as it says, behold, I make a covenant. So Hashem says that as long as you say the Yud Gimel Midos, as long as you mention these 13 attributes of mercy, you can be guaranteed that your tefillot will be heard. This is, of course, important later, when Moshe actually has to invoke them again, right? After every disaster that Bnei Israel have. But of course, this was after the golden calf. This is already after the golden calf. Again, after the meraglim. Well, every time Bnei Israel do something wrong, Moshe has to invoke these 13 attributes. And the Gemara says it's a good reason why he does that, because Hashem guarantees and promises that he will not turn them away
empty-handed. All right, I brought the Aruch Lener over here, one of the commentaries, because he just offers a different perspective just in terms of what's going on in the pasuk. He says, "Mizeh mashma d'Rabbi Yochanan darish vayikra Hashem shakadosh baruch hu shakar leyudgem umidos kedei sheilamid Moshe." You say it's the obvious. The Gemara is assuming that Hashem is the one who's reciting these 13 attributes. That's what Rashi says as well. Amnam b'targum Yerushalmi. This is not the targum that we have printed in our Chumashim. Isay v'tzali Moshe. What's v'tzali?
Pray.
To pray. Exactly. V'tzali Moshe. V'amar eishem v'farish v'yikra al Moshe shemoshe karakem. That the targum says, no, it was Moshe that says. And I just mentioned that just to give a little bit of perspective to show you that there is a problem of scope here. It is unclear. There are different interpretations. But either way, we have this Gemara. What kind of questions do we have about this Gemara? Any questions? Anything bothersome? No? That's fine.
No, in other words, all you've got to do is just invoke the 13 and you're guaranteed to be...
Sounds like it, right?
Sounds like it.
It's a special incantation that you can say and then, poof, you get whatever you want. Or at least you don't get beat up. Right. Eino chozeret reikam. Exactly. So what you say?
There is a response or reaction from Hashem to you invoking the yud gimel midot. That doesn't necessarily mean
right.
What your expectation is.
Right. You don't always necessarily get what you were asking, or at least not in the form that you expect to get it. Which, you know, we generally say about prayer, you never know how things get received. But at least you can be sure that it's not gonna, you're not gonna leave empty handed, right? Like we say in Shmon Esrei, in Shmakalein. Right? Don't leave us empty handed. Okay, so take a look at the Rabbeinu B'chaya in the next source. So Rabbeinu B'chaya says, "V'tzarich ata l'dat ki kol ha'mevin shloshes remidot v'yodeh pirushan v'ikran u'mitpalel b'hem b'kavana." Anybody who understands the 13 attributes and prays with them, b'kavana, with kavana, I leave that untranslated for now. Ein tvilato chazeret rekam, it doesn't return empty-handed. Elim ken ayu b'yado averot shmakvot zeh. This is something interesting. Unless, well, he says, unless, of course, you have some averus that are stopping you. It kind of takes away the power, doesn't it? I mean, the Gemara says that you can guarantee, Hashem made a bris, Hashem made a covenant, that if you say the 13 attributes, in some way you will get an answer. And Rabbi Nachman starts off that way. If you really understand the depth of the Yud Gimel Midos, you can be sure, you know, unless you have been a bad boy, and then, you know.
Unless you are still a bad boy, until you are a bad boy.
Okay, unless you are a bad boy.
You're entitling the 13 Averos and you're eating Chazer in the meantime.
Okay, Seder. Whatever it is that you did, it certainly takes away, meaning at first we thought it was this magic incantation, then it turns out that, you know what, it doesn't always work if you've got Averos. V'nei b'zman hazeh she'anachnu shurim b'galut, he's going to say, nowadays, since we don't have anything else, we only have tshuva and we have Bakashat Rachamim from the 13 attributes, so we need to use these 13 attributes, which explains why they're as part of Slichos. What bothers me about this, Rebbe Bechaye, is just, what's the connection between Kavanah and the Averot? I know that it shouldn't be this magical incantation, that you just say it and for free everything, but it sounded like it was. And then all of a sudden he says, well, your moral standing, your Averot, as Nathan is saying, if you've got these Averot in your hand and you go jump into the mikvah, but where's the connection? Then where does the Kavanah come in at all? Right? Maybe I'm not being clear about the question, but there's this odd incongruity between what Rabbeinu Bechaye is saying about how the Yud Gimel Midos work, and then all of a sudden if you have Averot, then they don't work. Something here is strange. So I want to spend the rest of the time talking about what this Kavanah Rabbeinu Bechaye is talking about is. How would you guys, do this again, how do you guys define Kavanah? What is Kavanah? And we talk about it, especially in the context of tefillah. Intent. So as opposed to?
Disintent.
A lack of intent. What do you mean? You mean like, I mean what I say, or?
Concentration.
I understand what I say. Concentration. Concentration as opposed to being scattered, distracted. To be present. Understand what I say, kavana.
Resolve.
Okay, good. All right, a little bit more of mean what I say, I think, right? Anything else? Okay, so there's a sefer called Chanenu Vanenu. I actually haven't seen it inside, I only saw it quoted. But I brought a couple of options here. There's a place where I want to eventually get, but we'll start here first. So the Sefer says, V'yesh levayer bebeit ofanim. There's two ways to explain this kavanah. Ha'achat, lefi ha'mevuar la'el, d'tzarech lageshet l'tfilat yud gemuminut b'hakarashu b'chlal mi she'en lo. She'en bi'ado Torah u'masim tovim kedei lekabel b'scharo. What are they're not called just the yud gimel midot. What are they called? The yud gimel midot? Harachamim. If you're using rachamim, what does that indicate about you? That you need rachamim, which means that you've got something wrong, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be praying with yud gimel midot harachamim. You'd be praying with yud gimel midot hadin, right? So saying you have to approach it with the proper mindset, which is, I really need rachamim. I really need Hashem's chesed. I need Him to be merciful towards me. And it's required for the yud gimel midot, because otherwise you're not really asking for Hashem's rachamim. What's the problem with this? One slight problem with this, in terms of it explaining Rabbi Yehuda ben Bechaya, which is what he's trying to do. Well, if I'm anyway... Yeah, I mean, that means... I mean, if I don't have if I'm not allowed to approach God for the yud gimel midot harachamim with averos, then what's going on here? Rabbi Yehuda ben Bechaya said that the averos will stop me. Well, if I have averos, then if I don't have averos, then I don't need his rachamim. I could just ask for whatever I want. So okay, it's a good idea. I mean, certainly we should approach that way, but it doesn't fit well very well in Rabbi Yehuda ben Bechaya. So the next theory, he says, inami in the next paragraph. Okay, standard kavanah. Not so standard for some people, but we know that we're supposed to have, in Shmona Esrei, we're supposed to have the mindset that we are standing in front of God. Sounds trivial, but it's not so easy for us all the time. No, when you're standing in front of God, that's tefillah. He quotes the Yudum Divrei HaGaon of Chaim. Rav Chaim of Brisk has a famous piece at the beginning of a Sefer on the Rambam, where he writes that there's two kinds of kavanah when a person approaches Shmona Esrei, which is the quintessential prayer. It says, one kind of kavanah is to understand what you're saying and to, you know, have in mind while you're saying the words to mean them. And the other kind of kavanah is not necessarily to understand what you're saying, but at the very least to actually feel like you're standing in front of God. And Rav Chaim says over there that for the first paragraph of Shmona Esrei, you're required to have that first level of kavanah to understand the words that you're saying. And for the rest of Shmona Esrei, you don't have to have that level of kavanah. You have to at least, however, feel like you're standing in front of God. And the reason why that's key is because without realizing you're standing in front of God, then frankly, you're talking to yourself. That's like the ma'aseh mitzvah. Like when you pick up a lulav, right? If you pick up a lulav, you need to shake it. So you need for that, you need two components. Number one, you have to have a lulav in your hand. And number two, you have to shake it around, right? For tefillah, you need to say the words. But you also have to be standing in front of God, because if you're only saying the words, then who are you talking to? You're just talking to yourself. So Rav Chaim feels that that's actually part of the ma'aseh mitzvah, to feel like you're standing in front of God. Without that, you're just talking to yourself, and that's not tefillah. So he says, maybe that's what the kavanah is over here, that you feel like you're standing in front of God for the yud gimel midot harachamim. V'ari chazinan, he says at the end, b'divrei alevush, she'yud gimel midos makbil l'shmona esrei. And in fact, that there is a parallelism between these 13 attributes and the Shmona Esrei. V'lachein na'agu lomar kadish titkabel achar slichot. An interesting halachic aspect of slichot. That, by the way, how does slichot start?
Ashrei.
And then you have the slichot. And then at the end, you have kadish titkabel. What does that feel like? Well, frankly, it feels like mincha. Right? Now, there's no aleinu at the end, which is striking. But that's because slichot is always... Well, that's not true. It's not always. But it's usually... What? If you do it in the morning, right? If you do it in the morning, then Alenu is going to be at the end of Shabbos, right? Okay, I'm not sure how late, but yeah, okay, that's a fair point. It could have been inserted at the end. Rabbi Salvechik always felt that Slichos is basically an introduction to Tefillah. That's how it's supposed to be tacked on at the beginning of Tefillah, and then that kind of brings you into Tefillah, which explains, by the way, there's a minhag, which doesn't seem to be kept much anymore, that the person who says slichot is supposed to say all the tefillot that day. We don't do it anymore.
Including Mariv the night.
Yeah, yeah. We don't do it anymore. All right. So that's another theory. Now, we're going to get to the third theory, but before we get to that, I just want to read you the Maharal on this Gemara. So the Gemara has the sefer called Be'er HaGola. Be'er HaGola is an interesting sefer. Basically, the point of it is basically the sefer that's written as a
it's kind of a polemic, but it's really an anti-polemic. During the time of the Maharal, in the 16th century, there was a certain Jew that had basically published a sefer, so to speak, a book, basically pointing out all of the ridiculous things in the Chazal, and in Gemara, and in Mishnah, and in Midrashim. All the ridiculous things. So the Maharal, as a defense against that, published a sefer called Baragola, which goes through different weird Gemaras, and tries to explain, in his opinion, authoritatively explains them in a very rational and deep way. One of the Be'erot, he breaks it up into different Be'erot, one of the Be'erot is exclusively dedicated to Gemarot about Hashem. Gemarot that describe Hashem in an anthropomorphic way and that philosophically cause problems. So our Gemara is one of them. Why? Because it describes God in what way? As passing over, well, the Torah describes him that way, but also as wearing a talit. And describing something to and teaching Moshe how to pray. So the Maharal wants to explain what's going on with this Gemara. So he says, Hashem relates to us the way that we relate to him. There's a parallelism. So if you're concentrating on God, you're focused on him, then guess what? He's focused on you. What's the point of a chazan putting on a talit? Or anybody putting on their talit, especially when they do ituf. What's ituf? Wrapping around the head. Why does a person wrap his talit around his head? Maral says to focus, so that he's got tunnel vision. Puts it on his head in a certain way so that he doesn't turn to the left, he doesn't turn to the right. Hashem, when he puts on this talit, the Maharal says, is focusing. He's making sure that he's got very, very focused vision. V'lo kach kasher namutaf, he says, not, if you don't have ituf, then it's not like that. And he says, basically this is his point. His point is that the Gemara is teaching us that Hashem is teaching Moshe not only the words to say, but also the manner in which to say them, in a very focused way. This is Rabbeinu Bachai's Kavanah, right? So the Maharal says, that's what the Ituf is about. That's what the Gemara is trying to tell us. That Hashem is teaching Moshe, you focus on me, I focus on you. The best way to focus on me is to put on this talit and to focus very, very, very straight, narrow tunnel vision on one specific thing. But the key is, of course, that there's something over here that we're supposed to be focusing on. We saw two theories already. One, that you're supposed to focus on the fact that you need rachamim. The other, you're supposed to focus on the fact that you're standing in front of God. Now, of course, Hashem doesn't need that kind of kavanah, because he's God. He knows who he's standing in front of. So there is one other theory. This is probably the most well-known theory about yugid u'midat harachamim. You've probably heard it before, but you may not know where you heard it. One of the places where it's found is in the Al-Sheikh. So take a look at what the Al-Sheikh says. He says, I actually have a question. You guys should have asked this question before about the Gemara, but you didn't because you don't like to ask these kinds of questions about prayer. What question am I referring to? The Gemara made a promise, right? What was the promise? Right, which indicated, or at least seemed to indicate, Matthew's point aside, that the prayer that you submit to Hashem, as long as you mention Yugam Yimidat HaRachamim, will definitely be responded to, right? In some fashion. So the Al-Sheikh quotes the question, says, Vine Al-Sheikh Yakshe. Some people ask, Ki alo kama pamim omrim yudgo b'midot veinanim. People say the yudgo b'midot, and they don't get any response. Shemati b'shem baal sefer livnata. So that's his question. He says, we've been saying it for thousands of years. Ki ilot have been getting together for 10 nights, at least more than 10 nights a year, and they say, you know, over and over, yudgo b'midot arachamim, sometimes several times a day. The screaming out to Shemaim, and here we are, we're still in Galut. We're still in, you know, we're in Ranana, but we're still in Galut. The Beit HaMikdash has not been built. We've been praying for many years. So what happened to that promise? So Yitzhamati B'Shem Baal V'Sefer Livnat HaSafir Shemedatek Omro Asu Lufanai. I didn't bring you the Aramaic or the Hebrew of the Gemara, but the Gemara doesn't say pray and say before me these 13 attributes. What does it say? Asu lefanai, do before me. Why does that matter? Hashem is not interested in us simply reciting or chanting the Yud Gimel Midot and not doing anything about them, just hearing it from us. That's not what he's interested in. Kim shagam yu osin otam ki amidot ha-ne'amarim rachum v'chanun yihyu osim ha-maskirim otan v'zehu asu v'fanai. What Hashem wants from us is to actually act according to these Yud Gimel Midot ha-rachamim. Hashem, Hashem, Kel, Rachum, V'chanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, Emet. Hashem doesn't want us to just say them. He wants us to do them. V'ineni Mosif al Dvarav, he says, I want to add on one thing, that it doesn't say even Aseh L'fanai. What does it say? Asu L'fanai. Because he says, frankly, Moshe already knows how to be like God. Moshe is already this way. So Hashem doesn't need to teach Moshe. Hashem tells Moshe, tell them that if they want my rachamim, asu l'fanai, they have to act like this. They have to act according to these Yud Gimel Midot ha-rachamim. They have to do v'halachta midrachav, they have to walk in my ways, and then they can be sure that their tefillot won't be chozer reikam. They won't go back empty-handed. It says, that's the pshat in the Gemara. When it says that they're not going to go back empty-handed, it's not going to be because they say these things, it's because they act that way. I want to suggest that this is the kavana that Rabbeinu Bachaya is referring to. That really, when we say kavana, this is something that I've said before, when we say kavana, the real meaning of kavana is what? What does kavana actually mean? Like the shorish of the word, what does it mean?
Direct.
Exactly, it means to direct. So when we want to talk about having kavana in tefillah, what do we mean? I think mean more normally people understand, and very, you know, reasonably so. Things like what Nathan was talking about and other people, it means concentration. It means to have resolve, right? It means to know what the words mean, right? But it's not only enough to know what the word means or to concentrate, right? The key to tefillah, and this is something that people have a hard time understanding, I think. I have a hard time understanding it sometimes, is that we like to think of tefillah as always being self-generated. Like, we are creating the experience of tefillah. We're saying what we want. We're connecting to God in a way that we feel personally connected to. Right? And that's all well and good. You know, we should do that. And we lose sight of the fact that, in Judaism at least, tefillot have very much to do with the words on the page. When we say kavanah and tefillah, one of the things we mean, and one of the key things that we really mean is, I think it was Don who said it before, that we mean what we say, right? Very often when we think of tefillah, what we really are thinking is, we want to say what we mean, right? We want to say what we mean when we're doing tefillah. But really what we should be doing is, we should be meaning what we say. And this gets lost, because we try to create a personal experience in tefillah, which is good, but sometimes you can lose in that, that you're supposed to be saying the words and meaning the words on the page. And when you say the words on the page in Slichot, what are you saying? Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun, erech apayim, rav chesed ve'emet. Notzeh chesed la'alafim, notzeh yavim, v'fesh, v'katav, v'nakeh. And what you're doing is, if you would mean those words, if you would really mean them, then you would become those words. You would actually act that way. When Rabbeinu Bachaye says that you have to have that special kavanah, and if you have averot, shema akvot, he's saying, because the point of the slichot is not only to say the words, it's not even to have the super, you know, this spiritual experience, but that they should change you. And if you still have those averot, shema akvot, those averot that are on your conscience, that are still there, it means that the words haven't done anything. Tefillot is meant to be, the tefillah, especially the slichot, is meant to be a transformative experience. Not only a spiritual connecting to God, that's true. There is that in tefillah. I'm not going to negate that. That's, of course, a key element of tefillah. It's why many people can enjoy tefillah. But it's supposed to transform us. We think of it as transforming God, don't we? We think of tefillah as some kind of way of changing God, changing his mind. We want to get him to do what we want, right? But what does Pirkei Avot say? Aser etzono kirtzoncha. Make his will your will, and then he'll make your will his will. It's supposed to transform us. That's what the slichot is supposed to do. That's what the tefillah is supposed to do. But especially this. That's what the Al-Sheikh is quoting. If you can get the slichot to make you asu lefanai, kaseder hazeh, do in front of me, this seder, these Yud Gimel Midot ha-rachamim, then you will succeed. This is actually captured. This is the Chanina Vanina, the same Sefer. So he says, if you turn over the page,
נמצא דמעלות י' ג' מידות דנקרת, דנחרת עליהם ברית, שאינם חוזרות ריקם, אין זה רק על מי שאומרם בתפילות בכוונה. It's not good enough to simply say them with concentration or intention. אלא יש בזה גם חובת עשייה.
It requires action.
שיתנהגו במידות רחמים אלו האחד עם השני. You have to act according to them. וזהו הראה לו הקדוש ברוך הוא שאין כאן רק חובת אמירה, אלא יש כאן גם חובת עשייה. Not only, he didn't show him only what he should say, but also what he should do. And that's the נתעטף הקדוש ברוך הוא דהכוונה על סדר ההנהגה העליונה במידות אלו. Hashem actually put on the talit, so he showed him, focus on them like this, like the Maharal said. And he says, and he goes on to say, if you don't change your ways, then you can't expect the effect. And he also quotes, by the way, this Eliyahu Zuta, the Midrash, Eliyahu Zuta. So it quotes a different passage. Yancha Hashem b'yom tzara. Hashem responds on a day of tzara. Haya David yodea shatid beit hamikdash. This is actually very similar to a different Gemara. The Gemara tells a story about Avram Avinu, or a Kedushin, I think. Or maybe, I don't exactly remember. Tells the story about Avram Avinu, who, when Hashem showed him the future, and he said, you know, the Bnei Yisrael are going to go into Galut, so Avram was worried. How are they going to survive in Galut? And Hashem said, don't worry about it, they're going to pray. And Avram said, but they don't have the Korbanot. So Hashem said that, the phrase was, I always forget it. Neshama parim slasenu, that we will give the korbanot with our mouths. So this is very, very similar midrash, less known midrash, very similar. Hayad David odeh shatid beit hamikdash liot charev. David knew that the beit hamikdash was going to be destroyed. V'korbanot betelin v'avonotan shel Yisrael v'yamitzar al Yisrael, and he knew that the korbanos were going to go away, and he was worried about Bnei Yisrael. What's going to happen to them? V'amar b'shasha tzarot baot al Yisrael mi mechaper aleihem. David said to Hashem, what's going to happen to them? Who's going to do kapara for the Bnei Israel? And Hashem responded, David al titzda'er shekvar giliti sidrei slicha l'moshe. V'amarti lo, b'sha'a sha'atzarot ba'ot al Yisrael yamdu l'fanai yachad ba'aguda achat v'yomru l'fanai seder slicha v'ani oneh otam. No, don't worry about it. I already told Moshe. When tzarot start to happen, all you have to do is gather everybody together and say these yud gimel midot harachamim and the slichot, and you'll be good. Now, it's interesting. Did the Gemara say anything about the aguda achat? Explicitly, no. What is the aguda achat? That is people acting according to yud gimel midot harachamim. That's people getting together, foregoing all the things that have come in between them, right? Because essentially, by the way, yud gimel midot harachamim is really all about ben adam l'chaveiro, isn't it? If we say that we're supposed to act according to that. We're talking about people getting together and forgiving each other and being filled with mercy towards each other. So that's when they get together, baguda achat. And then they quote the Gemara, basically. So that was basically the idea that I wanted to describe. This, I think, is at the heart of Rabbeinu Bachaye's suggestion. Right? Go back to that, where he said that if you have proper kavanah, you can be sure that it will not come back. You won't come back empty-handed. He said this weird thing. Unless you have aveirot, which kind of mitigated the whole thing. But if you understand that the tefillah itself is nothing, unless it transforms you, then you understand what he's saying. Saying that's the key to this. So this is something that we should keep in mind every single time we get together for slichot. Is that the more times we say it, the more times we're supposed to mean it until it actually starts to change us. I have on the bottom over here just something from Rabbi Flug in America, who he sends out these missives to YU students usually with halachot. And he has this thing over here just as a piece of halacha over here. And he says, the centerpiece of slichot is the recitation of the 13 attributes of God. And the Gemara says, as we read, that it always serves as an atonement for transgressions. And he quotes Rabbeinu Natan, who rules that you can only recite the 13 attributes in the presence of a minyan. Right, so this is interesting for people who are going to say slichot by themselves. It claims that you can't say the yud gimel midot harachamim if you're biyachid. If you're davening biyachidus, you can't say the yud gimel midot harachamim, according to Rabbeinu Nosson. The Torah questions this ruling, contending that there should be nothing wrong with reading the verses of Torah. What are you doing? You're just reading verses of Torah. So what's the problem? I can read any pasuk whenever I want when I'm sitting in a room by myself. Why shouldn't I be able to say yud gimel midot harachamim? So the Rashba, in his responsa, so he asks the first question, and he says that if you recite them as a form of prayer, then you do need a minyan. If you recite them only in the way that you read the psukim from the Torah, so you would recite them with the trap, right, with the ta'amim, like just you're reading the psukim, then you have no problem. So the Shulchan Aruch actually codifies Rashba's opinion. So if somebody is sitting by themselves and they want to do your slichot, they could still say the Yud Gimel Mitzvah Torachanim, but you shouldn't have in mind. And this sounds like, you know, what's the point? You should not have in mind that you're saying them as a form of tefillah, but rather that you're just saying them as psukim. Rabbi Yitzchak Turnow, he quotes, rules that during the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, then you can even do it without a minyan. Interesting, because when else, you know, we in Eretz Yisrael do it every day, but in Chutz La'aretz, and only we in this shul do it every day. Not everybody in Eretz Yisrael does it every day, but in Chutz La'aretz, Ashkenazim certainly don't. And anyways, he quotes that Eliyahu Rabba, one of the major codifiers of halach, of minhag, and the Mishnah Berurah as well, they agree that it's not true, that you can't, it doesn't, nothing changes during the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But what's interesting is why? Why does it matter if you have a minyan or not? Oh, right. Because remember what the Eliyazuta said. He said they have to get together as an aguda achat. Apparently, the 13 attributes, the Yud Gimel Mitzvah Torachanim, are something that needs a minyan or needs a tzibur at least. I'll describe the difference in a second. Needs a tzibur because the whole point is for people to get together. For one person to be standing in a room by himself, reciting Hashem Hashem Kel Rachum V'Chanun, which is supposed to be Asul Lefanai Kaseder Hazeh, it's supposed to transform your relationship with other people, then it misses the point. It's dafka, a form of gibush for people to get together and to transform their relationships with each other. That's the point of the Slichot. I mentioned that Tzibor because I saw an interesting halachic tidbit. The Mishnah Halachot, Rav Menashe Klein. So he said, he claimed that what happens if you have 10 women that get together and they want to do slichot? Can they do slichot with Yud Gimel Mitzvah Torachanim? So the Mishnah Halachot said no. It says davar shebekdusha. It's just like kaddish or any other davar shebekdusha or kedusha. So they can't. So Rav Tzvi Reisman in Los Angeles, right? So I think he wrote in a sefer. He disagreed. He said he thinks that when we have the slichot, it's not a it's not a davar shebekdusha that requires 10 men, but rather it's similar to Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem requires 10 Jews in order to be mekayem the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. And women count. For that, women count. You don't need a halachic minyan. You need a tzibur. But a tzibur doesn't have to require a minyan. And he thinks that slichos are the same way. It requires a tzibur. It requires 10 Jews, like a Kiddush Hashem requires 10 Jews. And therefore, you do not require 10 men. Even 10 women would be good enough. You need 10, because that's the shiur. But even 10 women would be good enough. I don't know whether the great Achronim have really ruled on this issue or not. I don't know. But that's an interesting thing, which also, by the way, just makes sense. That it's not a davar shebekdusha. It's not about God. Of course it's about God. But it's not about the same thing that Kaddish and Kedusha is about. It's more about people getting together and trying to transform their relationships with one another. So, Mirtz Hashem, you know, we didn't get too deeply in the Yud Gimel Mitzvah Torachanim themselves, and we didn't talk about the Slichot Piyutim, because we'd be here all the time if we were trying to do that, and it's a little bit difficult. But hopefully, at least this one aspect, which is clearly the most critical aspect of Slichot, we can understand, and we can try to transform our experience of Slichot by trying to Asu Lefanai a little bit more than Imru Lefanai. Take a break for a few minutes before Slichot starts.
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah.